Hello there, my name's Neil David and I'm the host of Eurograps Express, the podcast exclusively dedicated to the wrestling of Europe. If it's wrestling and it happens in Europe and it's good, we talk about it. Whether it's RevPro, Progress, WXW, Passion Pro, Pro Wrestling Chaos, Pro Wrestling North, we don't care, we talk about them all. If it's good and it's exciting, I want to share it with you. We're on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Check us out on the feed. Check us out on Twitter at EurograpsEXP. And join us for chat about European wrestling and a little bit of chat about cheese. Hopefully see you there.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Kids, do you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling too. This is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. Rob McCarron, originally scheduled to appear, has not shown up yet, but you know, he might show up during this time. That'll be interesting. If he doesn't, we'll bury him. No, we'll bury him. We are recording after Crown Jewel. Do we want to start there?
Yeah, might as well. We just watched it.
Yeah, we just watched it. I'm going to start with this note of all the things. I think people do not appreciate just what a job has been done on this LA Knight character. I mean, we say it, you know, every so often on this show, and that we can't believe that, but they, in less than a year, they have turned him from Max Dupree to a marketable, dare I say, bigger than any star in AEW star? Is that possible, or am I overselling that a bit?
I don't think that's unfair. When I started seeing and realizing the saturation of, like, the Yeah tagline, I became a believer that he's big. And people like him. People enjoy the matches that he does, even if they're very just there for me.
They're color by numbers, pretty much. I mean,
yeah, they are so there for me. But
there's nothing wrong with that, because that's the WWE main event style, and that's what people don't realize. It's like, for everybody you hear who, like, are wrestling fans who, like, they want their, you know, star rating matches, WWE has no interest in that, really. They love telling their story, and that's what they're gonna do.
Yes, they'll tell the story. Cool. That's what they're gonna do. I don't think it was the wrong choice not to belt him at this juncture, but it's certainly interesting. It's interesting. What do you do with LA Knight going ahead from here? Because
that's a good question too.
He lost in a pretty decisive way. Sure, Jimmy Uso was involved somewhat, but, like, Roman speared him on the outside, brought him back in, speared him again, pinned him clean in the middle of the ring.
Yeah, commentary, and I just got a text from Rob. He's not going to be able to make it because he thought it was later after Crown Jewel, not immediately after Crown Jewel. Okay. they put over hard on commentary, yes, Jimmy interfered, and that he kicked out of the spear. They went over that pretty big, but I think this is like one of those, you take the RKO out of your big flippy-doo moments, where it's like, you need a big angle on a follow-up show to rebuild this guy a little bit, or you just cut bait. Because it's one of those weird things where he's much bigger or in a better position than, say, you know, when they did this with, like, the Rybacks or the Kennedys of WWE. But he could get relegated to that position. And I'm what would you do with him? Because that's a very good question. Because it seems like they're building the blocks for, you know, Sammy and Cody and others going into the new year. What do you do with LA Knight then?
They still have to have like a War Games, right?
Yeah, they just announced War Games today.
I guess he'd be on the War Games team with Cody, and we build into Royal Rumble, and he's in the title chase. It's just he needed to get screwed over more in this match.
Yes, yeah, that to me is
he needed to get screwed over a lot more in this match.
It needed to be almost over the top screwing.
Yes,
of him. Like Solo, Jimmy, Heyman, everybody getting involved here at trying to make sure, as opposed to
Jimmy loosely doing stuff.
And all Jimmy did was pull Roman out of the ring. He didn't really hit LA Knight or anything like that.
The one clean pinfall. LA Knight would have had the pin. So he did have the visual three, but there wasn't even a weapon. I mean,
no.
It's weird. It sort of felt like he got killed here a little bit.
Yeah. And War Games is interesting too, because it looks like they're still building laundry War Games in terms of red shirts versus blue shirts.
Okay.
And not baby faces versus heels.
Which
would help LA Knight be on a team with, say, Cody, as opposed to LA Knight joining with Jimmy Uso on SmackDown.
And, like, he can't really challenge Seth Rollins. That doesn't do anything for him. There's no other... He needs a big title.
Yeah. Like,
yeah, he needs a big title. I don't know what that would be.
The Intercontinental title is Gunther, and that ain't going to be him.
No.
U.S. title.
That would
be
the way to make him anyways. That
you could conceivably have him be the guy to beat Logan Paul.
That would be something. That's certainly the best option we've come up with so far, I think.
Yeah.
Like LA Knight.
I so did mean that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But Logan Paul. And thinking about this, I mean, he was a backbencher with the NWA when we were still watching it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still amazing to me that you watch this and somebody in that just decided, hey, this chance getting over, let's put the rocket to him at least up to this point. When Vince didn't see anything in him, I mean, I don't know what... I'd love to get inside Triple H's head on this one. I really would. I mean, not that I'm dismissing LA Knight's charisma or talent or ability to do a promo. It's just one of those things where he's not that guy that they just go, okay, let's push him to the moon in a short time. So, yeah.
It really has been fascinating. On one hand, I applaud them for seizing the moment, but on the other hand, this is a guy I just don't quite see it with.
Yeah. Other results in there of note. The pre-show match.
We talked Logan Paul.
Yeah, Logan Paul beat Rey Mysterio for the United States title. I thought that was Logan Paul, I hate to say this because he's a scumbag human being, might be one of my favorite wrestlers on this roster. He just gets the business, every aspect of it, from hyping a fight to being in the ring to being athletic to doing high spots to keeping guys safe in the high spots that he does. Like, he took care of Ray on that moonsault.
That almost turned into an accidental tombstone.
Yeah. I mean, you almost are thinking, why not make him a babyface? But he's such a natural jerk that he had to keep him a heel. But he deserves a run with a title. I mean, every match he's been in has been a banger. Every match he's been in. He hasn't had a dud yet. And yeah, there's a lot of wonky interference spots, and maybe you want to save the wonky interference spots for important stuff. But no, Logan Paul, U.S. champ. I wonder. I wonder who you have taken off of him, because it looks like we're going to have Santos and Ray splitting up the LWO finally. Because I accidentally left the brass knuckles the apron.
Yeah, the brass knuckles were not accidentally left on the apron.
Yes, no, they were not.
Yeah.
Yeah, who would you get to, or would you bring up somebody like? Look, I'd bring up Carmelo Anthony and just have, or not Carmelo Anthony, Carmelo Hayes. Thank you, Jeff. and you know, if we're gonna bring him up to the main roster, have him take the title off of Logan. You can do the same with Trick Williams if you decide he's the guy. But yeah, pre-show was pretty good. Sammy and JD McDonagh had a banger. JD McDonagh absolutely tore up half of his torso wrestling that match. Just looked awful. Looked like he had road rash all up and down himself. But great match. I don't assume you watched the pre-show.
I didn't watch the pre-show, but I liked Seth and Drew.
Drew was great. Seth and Drew was a great match. Great match. It really was. I mean,
it was a really solid match.
To me, I was watching that and going, all right, how are you going to top that?
I liked Drew missing the Claymore. Like, that whole finishing sequence was really, really well thought out. For WWE style match, very pleasing.
Io and Bianca, I thought, had a pretty good match. Kairi coming in looks like they're splitting off Io and creating a faction there with Kairi. Rumor is that more people are going to join with them. And I'm thinking, because there's been news, even though they say, oh, it's not with WWE. I think Saray may be coming back and joining them as well. Because there's a rumor she's coming back to the States to work. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen an announcement of anybody booking her.
So now we should be really into Saray, right? Is that the move now? Now our opinion of her completely changes from the last.
I think she's a hell of a worker. I'm sorry,
Saray, not Saraya. I thought you were talking.
No, not Saraya. Saray.
Okay. I thought you were saying from AEW.
Oh yeah, that's a completely over, completely different conversation we'd be having.
You know, Kairi faction. My bad. No, Saray's great. I like Saray. She was really good.
Yeah, no, it's almost like that Angela Fong stable they had in Lucha Underground, if they did that, which had Io and Kairi, I believe. Wasn't that Io, Kairi, and
yes.
Who was the third?
Io, Kairi, and
oh, I can't remember right now. Although I could see those two join with Asuka as well. That could be the move too, because I believe they were a stable at one point. And plus WWE for some reason loves to have all the demos together for some reason, but they put over hard on commentary that Bailey was the one who put Kairi out. I almost called her Kairi out. Face turn for Bailey,
maybe.
I mean, she's done such a great job with this obnoxious thing, but it's time to, as she says, she's losing life, or she's losing matches but winning life. I think could you do a WrestleMania match with Bayley and Io and get that pass there? But I don't think you can, because you got Bianca and you're going to have Rhea and Becky on the Raw side. So I assume that she's probably going to be the feeder for Becky. And then she'll be on some Battle Royal or something. What else was on this show that I've missed?
What else?
Oh, Cody and Priest.
Cody and Priest.
That was pretty good.
That was a pretty good match. I thought that was solid. The story is being retold again. The chapters continue.
I thought for sure when Sammy took the briefcase, I thought they were doing a Sammy cash-in in Saudi Arabia. Because they put over that Damian Priest needs the briefcase in order to cash it in. And I thought they were going to do that possession as 9/10 crap and then have him cash in against Roman. Because if you saw the response he got at the beginning of the show, Sammy's a big deal in that country. And I thought they'd have them hold back the Judgment Day while he cashes in against Roman and gets a win. I thought that for a moment, because that LA Knight match was such a nothing match in terms of making you think LA Knight was going to win. I thought they were going to try and make it on a high note somehow.
That to me was the biggest. The story to me still remains the LA Knight match and just how by the numbers, he could have been anyone as generic Challenger X.
Yes.
Yeah, and this should have, at least in the loss, made it seem special. Heyman needed to have some sort of secret plan. LA Knight's entrance didn't even feel special. He didn't even do like a I'm getting the belt tonight sort of thing. Like there was just no aura of tonight's the night I become champion coming off of him.
I want actually the other match that was very, very interesting to me was Solo Sikoa versus John Cena.
Oh yes, that yes. Sure.
Because for a John Cena match, I mean, the only equivalent I can remember is the Brock Lesnar match where he just suplexed him, you know, 87 times and pinned him. There was no chicanery in the Solo Sikoa win. He dominated him and he beat him. And that's the story here. And I'm wondering, does that help Solo Sikoa at all? Or is it just, it's John Cena. He's old now and he loses all the time. Because Austin Theory got the rub and then nothing, and he's still nothing.
Well, yeah, I mean, what is the long-term point of Solo Sikoa beating John Cena? Is it to make him viable to beat Roman Reigns? You know, are we building to Solo Sikoa versus Roman? If we're not doing that, I don't know. I mean, I don't have faith that they're going to do this, but theoretically you have a really interesting road to the Royal Rumble with like Cody, Solo Sikoa, LA Knight, a bunch of people who like Kevin Owens even, who would credibly want to have like a title shot against Roman Reigns. And if you built up to that and actually had like all of these people vying for number one contendership, I think that's pretty intriguing. But what's the point of Solo Sikoa beating John Cena right now if you're not going to do something with it relatively quickly?
I would not be shocked if that's the Rumble match.
Solo versus Roman?
Yeah. Because I don't think Roman's working the rest of the year. So I just to be completist, the five-way for the women was just there. It really was. There were some good things. I mean, Zoe Stark was fantastic, I thought, in it, in terms of getting a few spots in there. But this was... I don't like five-ways because it basically cleans out the division. And, yeah, Rhea's cleaned out the division, and the story's probably for Mania going to be Becky. But we got 6 months until then. And...
It feels kind of like they wrote themselves into a corner coming out of this show in a lot of ways.
A little bit.
Like, because it's too early to tell the Cody gets the belt back. There feels like there's now no intrigue in the world title picture. The most intriguing thing they had, the LA Knight thing was good because you could string this out for a few months. Like, Roman, I would have had Roman get himself counted out. So do something where like Roman retains, but like he just decides that he's just not going to lose to LA Knight in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, and boy, that would have been interesting, especially in the vein of the end to that Bianca Io match, where it's like, yes, counter out because of the interference, but nope, she rolls in at like 9.5 and just gets moonsaulted and pinned. What? Let her take the L with the count out. And Io is now a cowardly champion who's taking the cheap way out, as opposed to, oh, it was interference, but she bravely beat the count just to get beat on the next move. I didn't get that at all in terms of storytelling.
These are important tools that you have available to you to string things out and kind of create continuations. And you know, pinning LA Knight clean. Yeah,
and if Bianca loses by count out, she can then say, you didn't pin me.
Right.
I don't understand that one at all. I watched that one, I went, all right, that's just stupid. I believe they did that ending. It was a good match, but the ending made no sense to me whatsoever. And then the LA Knight thing, it was like, yeah, they didn't cheat nearly enough to get the pin on LA Knight. It was just kind of like, hey, look over there, spear 1-2-3, and you're like, huh? How's that supposed to get heat on Roman about that?
In particular, I thought the moment where he Roman spears LA Knight into the barricade and then pulls him into the ring to finish him off in the ring made him look unbelievably strong in the win.
Yes.
That's a very strong, dominant sort of winning way.
Look at our dominant champ. Just kidding. Yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, it's just, it's like, okay, then why was LA Knight even here?
LA Knight didn't beat the count. He got completely ragdolled.
You could have done this with any of the Garza brothers or what that act or any act you wanted. And instead, you did it with the guy who has gotten the biggest pops and sold some of the most merchandise in the last year.
And you did it before the holiday season, which is really stupid because he's a merchandise guy. Like,
yes.
LA Knight's not like a generational wrestler that's going to have like 5-star matches with all these great talents all over the world or anything like that. He's a guy who's going to sell a lot of t-shirts.
Yes, he's going to have a catchphrase and a t-shirt.
Yeah.
That's your guy to do that.
That can work. And you did that. You killed them right before Christmas.
Dead.
Like, yeah, 3 weeks before Black Friday.
Like, they never would have done this with Kevin Owens. And I think Kevin Owens probably would have spoke up about it. You know, maybe it was just LA Knight didn't protect his character enough when they were pitching this to him. I don't know, but yeah, that's a good point. So it may have just soured me a little bit more on this show, even though it was intently watchable. There's no, I mean, other than Miz TV, which that was for the home team. That was all for that crowd, and they loved that guy. And that's good, and Grayson Waller's a goober who you can do this to. And I guess they're baby-facing the Miz after this week's Raw. I guess. Did you see that segment?
No, I didn't.
With Gunther?
No.
About who the... Oh, yeah, it looks like they're building up Miz versus Gunther for the Intercontinental title.
Okay.
Who's better, Miz or LA Knight? I think I'd much rather see an LA Knight match than a Miz
LA
match.
Knight, yeah, LA Knight, yeah. I was trying to, like, because, like, Miz, even at his peak, was never a particularly good wrestler. And, like, LA Knight's...
And he's not a bad wrestler. Let's get that out of the way. Miz is not a bad wrestler. It's just he's a dull wrestler in many ways to me. And you know what he's going to do. This is the WWE match style, and Miz is going to work it. And it's like, it's a safe style.
He has a really limited, like, yes, power of offense. Like, and LA Knight's got more going on in his offensive game than Miz does.
Yeah, and he's a better punch kicker, too, than Miz, which I love.
Yeah, yeah, right. I mean, he does the Canyon. There's a number of different moves that he does that, like, seem like they take a little bit more athletic chops than Miz's offense does.
Let's get to the news. Bryan Danielson broke an orbital bone in his face, which was suffered during not last Saturday, but the Saturday before his match against Andrade El Idolo. Kind of played up a little bit in this in the match last week against Okada and Orange Cassidy. Supposedly coming back in December, which I guess you can do if you can withstand the pain of taking bumps and the rigmarole there. But is Bryan Danielson starting to break down again here, Chris?
I don't know. Broken orbital bone. Broken orbital bone just seems like kind of a fluke injury.
I know. I was just overplaying that question because like, it's one of those things where it's like, you know what I mean?
He broke his pinky on a bad bump. Is he breaking down?
He broke his arm in the Takeshita match, I think, or whatever it was. He broke a bone in his arm at one point, or he worked the Zack Sabre match with the broken arm. But yeah, Godspeed to him. AEW needs him right now. In the wake of Ric Flair signed a 2-year deal with AEW, which was actually two different deals. The original deal was a sponsorship deal for his Woo energy drink as the official energy drink of AEW. Made from mushrooms. God, no. They had attempted to make a deal with WWE for the drink, but WWE already had an energy drink in place. The aforementioned Logan Paul's Prime, I believe, is that one. So they went to AEW and got the deal done. After making the deal, Tony Khan talked with Flair and his people very late in the game about the Sting idea and being a television character. The second deal, which actually closed on October 24th, was a 2-year performer deal to appear on television, which the company then announced on November 2nd. Also coming in late after the publishing of The Observer, Ric Flair has come out with yet another statement stating that AEW doctors have cleared him to take bumps. Chris, your thoughts?
Wrestle in an AEW ring, just like I dreamed of when I was a child. I'm looking forward to this. I think Ric Flair has a lot of gas left in the tank. He's been a fabulous promo in recent years, more coherent than ever. And I wish him and the company the absolute best in this partnership, and I hope they both get what they richly deserve.
Nobody's a bigger Ric Flair apologist than me, possibly, in current podcasting land. There might, you know, Bruce Mitchell might be, but I don't know if he even podcasts anymore. But no, you can't put him as a manager with anybody. He doesn't even bring.
He brings nothing
because he's become such a. It's like Al Pacino. He is the Al Pacino of wrestling.
Yes. Yeah. No. He is hoo-ha era Al Pacino.
Yes.
Where it's not actually useful. Like, this is not Serpico.
This is Al Pacino in that Adam Sandler Twins movie. What was it? Where he's doing the Dunkin' Donuts commercial and he's hitting on Adam Sandler in drag. That is what Ric Flair has become. He used to be the greatest wrestler to me in the world. And now he's wearing suits that looks like it comes off your grandmother's couch upholstery in 1973. He's wearing more chains than in the entire miniseries of Roots.
he looks skeletal in a way. Yeah, it's uncomfortable to watch him.
He's a dancing clown is what he is. You know, the Ric Flair drip, it's sad. And somebody needs to pull him aside and say it's sad. And not only that, I mean, look, I'm going to go back to this, and I'm not that guy on Twitter. But yes, the sexual assault stuff for AEW is a bad look, especially when AEW holds himself up as being, or as at least as catering to the type of crowd that does not want problematic wrestlers on its roster. They hold themselves as a superior moral fan base, and they don't want Ric Flair on there. So why would you sign this guy? I mean, I get. Look, the one thing with Sting, it was cute, great, keeping him throughout the whole retirement thing. You can't do anything with him from week to week. That's my problem with him. And he's just there for himself and the money.
Right. I mean,
he's not there to give back. He's not there to help anybody. He's there to party with the boys at the bar and tell war stories on the road and all that other crap that he likes to do.
The best use I could come up with is during the retirement run, he volunteers to be Sting's manager in like the twist.
And turns on him?
No, the twist is that there's no twist. That he's actually like a good manager to Sting. Like actually in the end actually takes the bullet for Sting. Like
I would be here for that. I'd be here for it.
Like the twist is that there's no twist.
Everybody's thinking, oh, here comes the turn. And it never comes. Blue ball everybody.
Yeah. It never comes. In the end, like Ric Flair actually does a solid by Sting.
WWE announced today that yes, Survivor Series is indeed War Games out of Chicago. CM Punk has to show up at some time in this show, right?
CM Punk.
Yeah, I cannot see this event going down without Punk coming in for at least a match at Rumble, if not Mania. And that might be how they finish the story with Cody somehow, is that he doesn't get to beat Roman. He gets to beat Punk headlining a Mania. I don't know. But I just can't see the temptation not being there for WWE to sign CM Punk. I'm sorry. All the sheets are saying they're not talking, but they might not be talking because it's already signed.
Yeah, there might be nothing more to talk about. I'm with you. I think that CM Punk's odds, especially with Vince really being demobilized more and more, his odds of returning back to WWE and doing something now, especially with the AEW experience in his mouth, that taste. He's, I think he's very likely to end up in WWE, and Chicago would be a really great place to debut him. Maybe as an opponent, maybe he's Roman's opponent at Rumble.
A secret member of one of the War Games teams.
Oh man, that'd be electric.
Yeah. Cause he really wanted to do that blood and guts match in AEW when, Danielson couldn't do it that one time. So yeah, who knows?
Yeah.
Here's something interesting that I want to discuss about. At the Fox earnings call on November 2nd, CEO Lachlan Murdoch, I don't know how you say that, explained the reason that they didn't bid to retain SmackDown, even though it was the highest rated show on the network, except for major sports most weeks and one most Friday nights. Quote, "I think we've talked about this before, but how we analyze the WWE renewal and we look at all our sports portfolios in the same way, based on the analysis from an advertising point of view, we were not hitting the advertising numbers due to the audience of WWE to make the return for our return on investment to be above the levels that we would accept. But also we didn't attribute enough significant retransmission revenue to the WWE either. So it made sense for us to move on from them. They've been a great partner for many years, but quite simply, we're very disciplined and the ROI didn't meet our discipline parameters. So we wish them luck and we moved on from them." This is the Observer now. "We have been given data at times showing that Fox lost money on the $205 million per year price because even with the strong 18 to 49 numbers, a lot of advertisers had a negative view of wrestling fans and thus ad rates were not commensurate with the ratings." So here's my question, Chris, that is burning a hole in my head. Did WWE sell them that they were just like a sports property, that they could get advertisers like Mercedes-Benz or BMW or the things that you see on NFL all the time? Did Fox just not do its research on this? And is this an actual talking point that somehow, I don't know, are wrestling fans cheap? Do they not spend money? Are they trash? I mean, that's how it feels like every time this happens, this thing comes up. It's like, well, maybe they are the 18 to 49 demographic that likes Mountain Dew and Snickers and Pizza Hut and things that attribute. Maybe their demographic is a little younger than we think, and they're all into the junk food, and maybe they need cut rate auto insurance or something to that effect. Maybe they have reached or exceeded their grasp in terms of the types of advertisers they can get, as opposed to, you know, carny white trash, you know, K-Tel's hits from the night from the 60s or whatever. I don't know. I this is one of those things where it feels like they scapegoated wrestling fans, but then you see AEW fans going, "Yeah, see, you WWE fans, you have such a trashy product, you can't get the big name advertisers." And I look at the advertisers for AEW, I'm like, you guys ain't doing much better there. You're getting about the same kind of reach, and you have a higher demographic in 18 to 35 or 18 to 49. We both study business somewhat. We both study advertising somewhat. Is this just, we put on primetime and we expected it to get a primetime audience and also primetime advertisers? Because I know media planners poo-poo wrestling. They do. But it got great ratings on that network. And it's not like everything is highbrow on Fox. So explain this to me.
I think that Lachlan Murdoch is covering his ass, and that this whole story about the advertisers and the revenue and stuff is a, like, look over here, pay no attention to the bigger issue, which is that they just overpaid for the product in the first place.
Gotcha. Yeah.
I think that they had buyer's remorse after overpaying for that deal. I think you sort of like got into some of that too, where it's like they did say they were like a sports product. Remember when they did this deal and they came up with this number and it was like stupidly high. And we were kind of shocked by it.
And they were going to build the product around Brock and Ronda Rousey. They were going to make it an MMA type product or whatever. That's what they were sold on.
Yeah. And nothing like that remotely has come to pass. Both of those figures, I mean, the window for both of them has closed, clearly. I think
they thought that their sports department was going to embrace this as well.
That's
because,
also,
I mean, if you ever watched, remember,
yeah, like Joe Buck, like
Joe would Buck that. Would just give the worst live just reads.
Just crap on them.
Well, that sounds exciting, Troy. Troy Aikman just drools all over himself because he's been hit in the head too many times. Now there were some of their advertisers did put it over pretty well. Like Gus Johnson, I thought, did a great job on the live reads and stuff, but just it was one of those things where it's like, they thought they were going to be able to have sports. Cause they were doing the, am I mistaken? No, they had some of the Thursday night football games at the time. So they're going to have sports straight through from Thursday to Sunday. Because you'd have college football or baseball on Saturday, and you'd have football on Sunday. And Friday was going to be wrestling, and wrestling was going to be that sports product that kept everybody tuned into Fox. And I said before, I mean, they overachieved because originally they were not holding that spot from the Tim Allen show, Last Man Standing. And then they started getting over 2 million viewers a week, which for wrestling is fantastic, but...
But they definitely had
a lot
of...
And for primetime television now. Primetime television is dead.
Contract, though. So, like, they inked that contract, proceeded to turn in several stinky years of television. Then the Bloodline thing started to catch fire last year. And they've been on a bit of a hot streak going into the contract year.
Yes.
But it's kind of like a sports athlete. Like, are you going to renew based off of that? Like, they're playing...
Or future potential, yeah.
Yeah, so... I think that's kind of what's really, you know, I think that's the guiding wisdom here. I don't think Fox is so naive that they didn't know that wrestling has always like attracted like the Slim Jim and, you know, the general type of insurance companies, you know, call the general. That's fine. AEW is not going to be a great driver for Tesla sales or Mercedes-Benz.
This is not the luxury car set doing that. Even if the families bring their kids there and spend lots of money and might drive a Mercedes or whatnot, that's not going to be the advertisers that appeal to this sect. It's going to be, you know, Doritos, you know, chips, soda, fast food, you know, gaming culture types of things. And, you know, and,
no,
and I think, I don't think old heads tap into that. I think they still think that this is mostly a poor urban, poor rural type of product too, which that is not true. It is expensive to take your family to a WWE live SmackDown. If you take like a family of four there, I mean, it's not super pricey, but it's still fairly, you know, if you want good seats and not the nosebleeds, it's still a night out type of thing.
Oh, I mean, if you're getting, you know, for the close to the ring, it gets pretty darn expensive. It's an evening. That's like a Christmas present for a worker.
Yeah.
So in a lot of cases, you know, when I used to go to like the Dallas shows and stuff, you would see in those lower bowls, a lot of corporate seats, that sort of thing. And it oftentimes, you know, like it was actually their corporate partners, but, and then
you'd find somebody in the company who could bring their kids. I mean, my law firm was the same way. Cause we had box seats at what is now Crypto. And they'd always come to me with, unless an attorney could take his family to the wrestling event, those seats for business development went unused. So I always got them. So it was always kind of great for me, but yeah.
I can't believe it's called Crypto.
Well,
it's still like really funny to me. It was funny at the time when they named it.
I was hoping they'd start calling it the Crypt for shorthand, but that never caught on.
The Crypto.
Yeah. It's probably like in reverence to Kobe Bryant. You don't want to call that place the Crypt.
Oh yeah. Rest in peace, big dog.
Yeah. Well, that'll do it for wrestling news. Now we're going to go into the Lazy River, which we've already kind of started to delve into with our with our crown jewel hot takes. That's the first time we've had hot takes in a long, long time on this show, Chris. How'd you feel about it?
I mean, it was fun watching.
I kind of like it. I kind of like having hot takes
live and then just, just dropping takes right after the show. That was fun.
I would like to start the lazy river today, if sure. I may, with this. I don't want another stupid passive aggressive. The elite are splitting up angle. Please, please do not do this to us. And I enjoyed this with the number of people from Voices of Wrestling, from Figure Four, from other outlets, et cetera, who have finally come around to the fact that, oh, maybe the storytelling's a little wanting in AEW. Oh, welcome to the party, pal. But they are coming at it from nostalgia for the first couple years of AEW. I get this. But allow me this, because the problem has been the entire time that this company has not given the people who jumped on board immediately to All Elite Wrestling what they want. Here's what AEW fandom wanted from the get-go. They wanted a shot across the bow at WWE that the best wrestlers are the champions and the biggest stars in your company. And what they wanted was, after the first pay-per-view, they wanted Kenny Omega or Hangman Page as your world champion. They wanted the Young Bucks as your tag team champions. They probably wanted Page as either number one contender or a secondary champion if you could. And they wanted a babyface horseman. And they wanted to cheer on that unit of friends who were also great wrestlers and ass kickers. And they were the ones to build the company around, and they were your stars, and they were the centerpiece of everything. And instead, what they got was the vice president saying, oh, we can't push people. I mean, we can't push ourselves over talent. We need to build up young guys. You had the Young Bucks losing to Private Party on the first episode of Dynamite. You had Chris Jericho because he was better for business, because he's more well-known because of his WWE run, et cetera, et cetera. You had all these excuses, and you've never pulled the trigger on what everybody wanted coming into this whole thing. They wanted the Bucks, Kenny, and Hangman as a strong unit that were the top people in this company. Agree or disagree, Chris?
I think that maybe they did, but that was also 2019. And times have changed.
And it's too late to do it now.
It's way too late to do it now.
Everybody's a little older. Everybody's a little slower. Everybody's a little less of a star, to be honest with you.
Yes. And Matt and Nick Jackson's version of developing a character is just being petty, lousy friends again. like the most consistent piece of characterization is that they're actually kind of bad friends.
I won't deny that.
Right. That's the most consistent piece of characterization about them, whether it's like they don't like it. And they're also like they're like toxic friends. Like, we've all had the friend who doesn't like any of your other friends.
Yes. They did this with the Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly thing in the Elite. Remember this?
Yeah. And they also did this with
Hangman and Kenny.
Yeah. Hangman and the Dark Order.
And the Dark Order, yes, you're right.
Yeah, the culture of the Dark Order as well. Like, they're like lousy, toxic friends.
They are the needy chick at the party.
Yeah.
Oh, it's not my birthday party. I'm going to start crying and get all the attention. That's the Young Bucks. That's their character.
And then it's like, it then becomes an issue of, how am I supposed to feel about them when they're wrestling, when I see them backstage being petulant, like, but not heels. Like, they're like annoying, lousy baby faces, but not heels. And then, I mean, like, this is sort of a sidebar, but I feel like it's got the same energy. The Roddy Strong and the Kingdom stuff with Adam Cole.
Is yes.
That, like, that same sort of like goofy, inconsistent characterization. But on the Bucks stuff, just to finish out the circuit, I think there was a time where people wanted the Elite to be basically the babyface horsemen. And maybe you have a hangman turn on all of them or whatever, right? But that window is closed. And I think both companies don't really know really what they're doing right now. The Mania plan seems really unclear for WWE. And over on the AEW side, there are a lot of question marks as well.
Well, the Mania plan doesn't have to be clear until after Rumble. So this is where the weird part of the year always happens. Like you'll get somebody who gets a short like world title run. Like this is where they put like the world title on Jeff Hardy on SmackDown at this time of year, you know, to run for a month before taking it off of him at Rumble. This is where they'll try things. They'll bring some people up. They'll bring some talent up from NXT to put them in there and see if there's anything there. This is really the silly season of WWE where nothing quote unquote matters. And that's why we always get into this brand supremacy crap on Survivor Series is we really are treading water until we get to Rumble and the Road to Mania. And they don't have that button on the story usually, although they did last year with the Sammy stuff. So,
right. Last year, they actually had stories going into Rumble.
Yeah.
And you know, this year they're definitely kind of on a search as well. So.
Your turn, sir.
I guess we can stick with that AEW Dynamite as well here. Like just looking through the card here. I don't have a lot to say about like Orange Cassidy versus Claudio Castagnoli. Like it was a very well worked match, but It didn't surprise me that Cassidy retained.
It feels like they're going to reset and give the belt back to Moxley again.
Yes. Right. And then, yeah, you kind of have you had the Moxley interference right there at the end. That's right.
That's what this feels like. And I don't agree with that. I mean, I didn't necessarily agree with taking the title off of Orange Cassidy in the first place.
Right.
But if you had to take the title off of Moxley, you know, to then give it back to Orange Cassidy to then do it again. I mean, this literally feels like, oops. Okay. And with Phoenix somehow being in there as the bridge, but it's like, oh, Moxley didn't get a chance to do his title run. We got to figure out a way to start over again. Let's do that. And I'm just like, okay. But Orange Cassidy is still one of the hottest guys you got in the thing. And you've now given him character depth that he cares about this title. So I think that'd be kind of a mistake.
Like the whole thing that is interesting about Cassidy's character, which is actually, I mean, I think been a positive development in characterization in AEW. A few of the strong examples. Guy doesn't care about anything, wins a title, all of a sudden realizes that he actually cares about like being a champion, like that. Yes. Actually being a champion matters to him, that underneath the demeanor, he actually really cares about that. I think that's really interesting and compelling.
I didn't find MJF's story compelling on this Dynamite. The search for partners. I swear going into that last commercial break, I thought for sure his partners were going to be Jarrett Sotnam and Jay Lethal, which I was here for. But just to get the action figure variant with the pink. And we had I don't mind we're setting up to get to the scissoring spot. I get that. I just felt that an overrun to get to that spot was a little much. Let's tighten up the show a bit and just do it in 2 hours and end with the thing, because it's not a big enough moment where it's going to carry. Like the Acclaimed are not going to be main event players after this in the world title picture of any way or in any form. It doesn't do MJF a whole lot of good. It was just, we're doing an overrun because we were allotted the time and we were allowed to. So keep watching, suckers. If it's up for a world title, change, sure, I'm here for that. To see friendship and Adam and MJF and Max Caster finally getting to scissor with Daddy Ass and and Bowens. No, that can be done within the 2 hour allotted time. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it was unrepentantly stupid. And I keep going in my mind, there's a place and a time where I would have enjoyed that just fine. Like in the middle of a show, like in the first hour as like a sub angle, if it was just MJF and Max Caster doing it and like MJF wasn't champion right now. And you like that'd be totally fine. The Cole walking around backstage, realizing he has no friend. I mean, all of it was goofy and ironic and silly. And like, I don't think it helps MJF as a champion. I don't think it helps him become more compelling as a champion. I guess it sort of helps him as a babyface, as a he's our scumbag thing. But, you know, the pseudo-romantic relationship between the two Maxes is not something I'm here for.
And it goes to another complaint I have, in that the time only goes forward when everybody's at work. I mean, he had all week to get three partners here, and he only waited until, I mean, I guess you could say that's a party to his arrogance. But yeah, you can miss me with the, oh, I need to call Darby an emo bitch during this time. You know, I mean, I thought, you know, Wardlow's there and he's just going to choke him for a while, but he's not going to beat the crap out of him. He's just going to scare him a little bit type of a thing. And then they didn't follow up on the Joe being his friend gimmick.
Right. I
mean, it was such a weird.
It was lazy. It was lazy writing, because it's like, on one hand,
it was writing for the joke versus the story is what.
Yeah.
Was.
Right. Yeah. Very much writing for the punchline of the joke rather than writing to create a coherent story that is in service of the joke.
Your turn, sir.
Man, that was a good one though. I felt like that was a big problem. Sheeta and Nightingale's match was fine.
Ahead. Sorry. No, I'm going to go into this angle afterwards. That was something on my list.
Okay. Yes. The angle afterwards where Sheeta runs up and like attacks Tony Storm, like kind of out of nowhere. Tony Storm's gonna win this title. I said,
now, I dug that part of it. I dug that Sheeta's like, I'm tired of you coming out here and being a drama queen when I'm trying to win this match. She just does the cut the side, gets the shoe out of the way, and just starts beating the crap out of Tony Storm. I was here for that. It's the other part of this angle that I got angry at, Chris. And I don't get angry at people wasting my time with wrestling angles just to drop them, but this one got me. And,
the Julia Hart thing?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
We blew Mist in Sky Blue's face, and we've been going through emo Sky Blue dressing up as the Mystery Machine for weeks now, because we're expecting this. And then we had the Mist in Willow Nightingale's face, and half of her face going black as well in terms of the makeup. Only now that Julia Hart's back, to have Sky Blue turn around and blow Blue Mist, and miss most of it, but Blue Mist, and these effects are still there, and it was all just kind of see, it's not really affecting me all that much type of a thing when we were building that story for three weeks.
The Mist had been really established, too, as a thing that, like, alters people's personalities. So the idea that Sky Blue somehow figured out how to unalter her personality from the Mist is,
well, she was in the lab concocting a special Blue Mist, which we assume now will possibly change Julia Hart's demeanor. I don't know.
You can actually get that Blue Mist from the household products aisle.
Oh, can you?
Yeah, at your local grocery store. You shouldn't put it in your mouth, though.
This women's division needs stables, and I thought that's what they were going for. And I didn't like the idea of a Dark Order, House of Black female version, but it was something, and they've basically been, look, if I'm going to have Sky Blue on my TV every week, might as well give her some characterization, even though she's not my favorite performer in the world. And Willow Nightingale, we thought she might be beating Jade to get a giant baby face push, and here she is playing third banana to Julia Hart and Sky Blue. And they only have three contenders to the title because we just rotate between Ruby Soho, Sky Blue, and Willow Nightingale every time. I mean, I know we have a lot more women signed to this division. What are we doing? Let's get some characterization in there, kids.
Man, hindsight being what it was, not having Willow beat Jade was a mistake, huh?
Yes. Very much so. I mean, it felt like a mistake
at the time, but it increasingly feels like a giant mistake.
I mean, we've been telling the story that, oh, Sky, and they've been putting it over on commentary week after week after week. Oh, look, Sky, she has a different demeanor ever since she got missing. Oh, look, she's appearing in darker makeup. Oh, look, she's changed her wardrobe, et cetera, et cetera. Nope. Back to one, everybody. I'm gonna jump over to the Fed. Oh, go ahead.
Like, it really just. It destroys what does the Mist do? You know what I mean? Like the Mist is a silly gimmick, but like if you establish that the Mist like alters people's personalities, you have to stick with that. That has to be sacrosanct.
This is nothing but world building, and if you establish rules for the world, you have to stick to the rules of the world. You know, when Mist had different colors and those meant different things, promotions would stick to it. You know, the black mist was different than green mist, was different than red mist, you know, et cetera, et cetera, when Muda would do it or whoever. Look how cool Muda was.
And establish the Mist does something, it's got to do the same thing every time.
Yes. Unless you find a way to block it or something, unless there's something story-wise to do it.
But usually that's supposed to be like you duck the Mist or something like that.
Yeah, you put on a face shield or something.
Yeah, something like that.
Don't know which one to go with, so I'm going to go with this one. The Creeds have been called up to the main roster. I thought they had a fairly, I'd say it was a nondescript yet not bad match in their debut against Alpha Academy. And then they had to go back to high school for a night in NXT and tore it up against the Garzas.
That match just started at like a 6 or a 7. They were just going at it right from the
start. We're gonna do a table spot first, and then we're gonna shorten your careers from there. I mean, that was a brutal, brutal match on that one. You're just like, hold on, are we protecting these guys from themselves or what? But no, I enjoyed the hell out of that match to open up night two of Halloween Havoc. I thought, and look, I think the Creeds are going to be fine. I'm going to be very interested to see how they present them with Ivy Nile. And dare I say, are they going to get a manager or are they going to get roped into a different stable where somebody can talk for them? Or are they going to let them talk for themselves? It's not that they're bad talkers, it's that they're not very good talkers.
I think Julius is better than you give him credit for. He's not amazing, but like I think Julius can speak for the unit.
Okay.
The big one.
Do you think that they having this gym class bully gimmick, when you have Alpha Academy doing all this character-y stuff, is it just gonna make them look like bland tag team?
Yeah, see, this is the mistake. I think trying to put them against Alpha Academy is probably like, it is the WWE thing of like, let's put all the like things together. But I would actually have them kind of get over as like what they were doing at NXT, where they came out the crowd, they were just like super connected with the fans or whatever. They're like, get them over more like the Steiner brothers.
Yeah.
But like, these are just like two brothers who love the fans. And, you know, love being brothers and love doing stuff. And they have their friend Ivy, who also does things.
this is our second Ivy. She also does things.
She also does things. We love doing stuff.
I want that as the gimmick now.
She also does things.
Well, who are you? I'm Ivy. What do you do? I do things.
Too, as well.
And then we get a love story with Tozawa.
That's fun.
Yeah, your turn, sir.
All right. What else happened on NXT? Okay, yeah, Tiffany's trying to Ted phone, and they, oh man, I fell asleep during this latter half of the show. What did you think of the Mr. Stone Bron Breakker match?
It was there. It existed. I think Stone is perfectly acceptable because he knows how to work.
Yeah, right.
And he's
compelling. I know what it's supposed to be, but was he at least compelling?
He got his ass beat pretty much, and that's okay. All it had to be. And it was fine. And he had one, like, I think he had a false hope spot, which was good. And this is all the setup then that Von Wagner's coming back way too soon to fight Braun, which is fine. Everything was narratively satisfying. Let's put it that way. There was nothing out there that was weird. Staying on NXT, I did enjoy, of course, Thea Hale and JC Jane versus Chelsea and Piper. Although Chelsea and Piper had a week, like on Raw, that costume was awesome. Them playing the Heart Foundation. That was absolutely fantastic cosplay by the two of them. I need more Piper Niven as Jim Neidhart in my life, because that was just hilarious stuff, and they were good. And of course, you know, Carmelo and Ilya are just gonna tear the house down every time. I mean, that's God. If they get, this is a lot like Gargano and Ciampa in terms of the rivalry. And you wonder if they'll ever be able to recapture that kind of magic on the main roster. And I think I have more hope for this one than those two on the main roster in terms of a rivalry, if they ever decide to do it that way. Because, you know, Gargano and Ciampa, they've been around a while. They've never really told the story of DIY breaking up, et cetera, et cetera. And it's probably too late to do that now, especially with Gargano and them being over 40. But with these two being young guys, you could absolutely tell that story on the main roster of their rivalry here, and it being a series that we look back on when they're both 38, 39 and going, yeah, those guys tore it up every single time they had a match with each other. They were the Brett and Shawn of their days type of a thing. Even though you probably won't get as much heat in there. Find something else you wanted to bring up.
I read the quick recap. It looks like Lola Vice won the breakout tournament.
Yeah. Here. That was expected, but she wasn't bad.
She wasn't bad, but Electra Lopez actually interfered in the match, which was, it's like this whole breakout tournament, they just couldn't decide was Lola Vice a babyface or a heel. They wanted to play it really down the middle. It was like she sort of like played it gray the whole way down.
Yeah, and I think they do that so that the crowd doesn't get on her after, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, I still think they're not sure where they want to put her. Be honest with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not sure if they want to give her a full heel run or they want to give her a full babyface push. So they stick her with Elektra, who's a heel. But you know that Lola Vice could turn on her at any time type of a thing. Yeah, I'm going to give some love to Aunt Pam because I haven't given her any in a while. I watched SmackDown last night since we're taping late. She's still the cornerstone of this division in terms of the person you put in there to work a match who's going to do everything smooth and everything correctly and make someone look like $1 million. She had a match with Bianca to set up this Bianca EO match. And of course, great chemistry, all the little things, took a bump through a table again. But yeah, I'm ready. Because I have a couple people in my mentions are like, yeah, you remember when Bayley was actually a star instead of just a goober all the time on TV? There are a lot of people who are saying they want another star push for Bayley, and I don't think that's coming. I think this is her role is being kind of character-y. She's the new Natty, is what I'm thinking. I mean, she's not that Natty's gone, but you know, she's the mid-card character-y heel who's going to make all the people they bring up from NXT look great. And that might just be her position, and there's nothing wrong with that. And they're taking care of her financially, but man, if they wanted to do a star ratings push for Bayley, I think she still has a few of those types of matches in her. Let's put it that way.
Oh yeah. I certainly agree on that. I just, They've never, especially with Charlotte back in the picture and now Jade Cargill and stuff, they've got other things, other projects that they are going to be interested in.
Yeah, and that Charlotte thing still lingers. I don't know how Ric Flair signed. See, that's the other aspect of this I didn't get into, but it's interesting. If this were Vince, Charlotte would be on a losing streak of epic proportions. Like, she'd have a farting gimmick or something. She'd have something to humiliate her, to punish her for Flair signing with AEW. But Triple H and Michael Hayes and the other people behind the scenes who are the power brokers and Pritchard and others, they respect the hell out of Ric Flair. And I don't think they'd ever do anything like that to Charlotte. But it is kind of interesting because Charlotte's taken clean loss after clean loss, and now they've put her in a tag team with Shotzi, which is a fascinating pairing in some ways, because let's put it this way, in terms of technical prowess, Charlotte is heads and shoulders above Shotzi, but they both do some high risk stuff at times. So it's kind of like almost watching a train wreck that hasn't happened yet. But at the same time, you're kind of still fascinated as to how those two gel with each other and whether or not they have tag team chemistry. But I don't think she's going to get, I don't know if she's going to be able to break Flair's record now. And I don't know if she's going to get pushed for a Mania main event this year.
Well, she might be the person who does the honors to Jade Cargill. It sounds like, if anything, she's in perfect position to give Jade a big signature win at WrestleMania.
Boy, you have a few of those, don't you? Because you have, if you decide that Jade's going to be NXT champ for a while, you have Lyra Valkyria right there. Not that she's not a star, but she's not a breakout star. She's not Jade. Let's put it that way. Jade and Charlotte would be very, very interesting. And if this is the cool down thing, you could see that too, where they're cooling down Charlotte so you don't expect her, and then she does something like win the Rumble. But I think Jade's winning the Rumble. So you'd have to get the belt off of Io onto Charlotte, and I still think that route is Bianca. God, do you have Bianca versus Jade? Would that be a way to go here?
Where's Mania?
Tampa. Or Jacksonville. So, no, not Jacksonville. Tampa, I think. Or it's in Florida, I think. Mm. Or no. Stupid. It's in Philadelphia. Philadelphia. That's where it is.
That could be an interesting move.
Because I think Rhea and Becky is the move on that side of the ledger. It's just if Jade's going to be main roster, she's winning the Rumble. And then do you put her against Charlotte, or do you put her against, or do you do a three-way? Oh, God, if this is a three-way, we're in trouble. But nevertheless, I mean, it's an embarrassment of riches in terms of which way you go.
Yeah, I mean, Charlotte, Bianca, Jade as a three-way would be a waste of talent, but, like, could certainly be a viable way to go. You could see those three having a... you know, Mania program, at least.
Speaking of three ways, if you haven't watched it, Rampage opening match, the three way luchador match was very good. If you like those types of three way luchador matches. And that's all I have for my list.
That's all I got too.
Cool. We'll end it there. We'll try and reschedule Rob McCarron for another time. Apologies to all those who came in after I hyped it. It's been Shake Them Ropes. You can follow me at Crap Game 13 on X. You can follow the show at Shake Them Ropes, all one word on X. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Podcast to fit any type of your wrestling fandom, including Music of the Mat, Days of Thunder, The Good, The Bad, The Hungy, and of course the flagship with Joe and Rich. If you like what I do on audio, and hey, why wouldn't you? I'm also part of the Fight Game Media Network, patreon.com/fightgamemedia. About 20 minutes after Dynamite goes off the air, we are live on YouTube, myself and Paul Fontaine, thoroughly deconstructing AEW Dynamite for that night. It drops on your podcatchers the next day if you are a member of the Patreon. Chris has other interests and things. He does things, much like Ivy Nile. What do you do, Chris?
Oh, yeah. So I like doing things. You can follow me on Instagram, instagram.com/doctor_Nov, N-O-V. I teach guitar lessons if you are so inclined, and bass lessons, and music theory lessons, music composition lessons, all of these sorts of things. Been doing it for a long time now. And I also work at the tram. But message me on Instagram if you're interested in music lessons. If you're trying to get on the tram, you can buy tickets on sandiapeaktramway.com.
And that Instagram account?
Doctor, D-O-C-T-O-R underscore N-O-V.
See you next week, kids.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener. Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself, how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.